thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Politicians on both sides of the aisle are condemning the fatal shooting of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. What we know about the shooting. Reform advocates react to an increase in the number of times Chicago police are pointing their guns at people. City officials and local organizations are preparing for a possible military deployment, how that might affect those experiencing homelessness. And advocates say federal funding cuts are putting local HIV prevention efforts at risk. First off tonight, Chicago area native and conservative activist Charlie Kirk has been shot and killed at a university event in Utah today. Kirk was shot at an event on the campus of Utah Valley University this afternoon. Mayor David Young says that local, state, and federal law enforcement are investigating, but the suspect remains at large. Kirk's appearance was part of a series of events on college campuses across the country. He was a prominent supporter of President Donald Trump and a founder of the youth conservative organization Turning Point USA, which confirmed the activist's death today on social media. Republican and Democratic leaders condemned today's shooting.
First, I want to express my sympathy to Charlie Kirk's family and to Charlie Kirk. Political violence, unfortunately, has been ratcheting up in this country. We saw the shootings, the killings in Minnesota. We've seen other political violence occur in other states. And I would just say it's got to stop. And I think there are people who are fomenting it in this country. I think the president's rhetoric often foments it.
Charlie Kirk was 31 years old. There is more reaction on our website. Immigration and Customs Enforcement says it's arrested at least 13 men in the city of Chicago as part of Operation Midway Blitz. The agency says the immigrants are in the country illegally and have criminal convictions or pending charges ranging from possession of stolen property and DUI up to rape and assault. Attorney General Pam Bondi spoke about the efforts to address crime in Chicago during an appearance in suburban Bensonville today.
We have a government here that does not want to cooperate with President Trump, and he wants to come in here and he wants to help this city. He wants to clean up Chicago and its suburbs.
Meanwhile, Mayor Brandon Johnson again today calling out the lack of communication from the Trump administration over efforts to deploy law enforcement and or National Guard troops to Chicago.
Nothing has been communicated with us, and that's what the problem has been. If this president was serious, he would work to coordinate with our local police department to get illegal guns off the streets of Chicago. That could actually help save lives. This president is not interested in the full vibrancy of our city. This is about his own political aspirations.
The mayor spoke with reporters after welcoming new residents to their new homes at the Thrive Inglewood Affordable Housing Development. The six-story building houses 62 new homes, 80% of which are affordable. Downtown Alderman Brendan Riley says he's challenging Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle for her seat. The 42nd Ward Alderman criticized Preckwinkle in his announcement video today.
But those who say Chicago doesn't have a public safety problem are either lying to you or hiding behind an armed security detail. Families here know the truth. This past Labor Day weekend, 58 people were shot, 8 killed. Now our county board president Preckwinkle and her political allies claim Chicago is safe and doesn't need help.
In his launch video, the 53-year-old says he strongly opposes President Trump's decision to send troops to cities without first coordinating with local leadership. He also touted his record as an independent member of the Chicago City Council and vows to fight to protect Cook County's health care system. The primary election, where he'll face Preckwinkle as she seeks a fifth term, is set for March 17th. Beloved former Chicago Cub Anthony Rizzo is retiring from baseball and rejoining the Cubs organization. Rizzo, who was a key player of the 2016 Cubs championship team, seen here catching that final out of that World Series victory. Rizzo began his career in San Diego, but after a year with the Padres, came to Chicago and spent nearly 10 seasons with the Northsiders before becoming a New York Yankee in the middle of the 2021 season. The 36-year-old Rizzo's new role will have him serving as an official Cubs team ambassador. Up next, there's been an increase in the number of times Chicago police are pointing their guns at people. Heather Sharone has that story right after this.
Chicago Tonight Black Voices is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
The number of times Chicago police officers pointed their guns at people increased more than 44% since 2022. That's according to records obtained by WTTW News. Our Heather Sharon joins us now with more on that data and the latest on efforts to reform the Chicago Police Department. Heather, you took a deep dive into what the department calls firearm pointing incidents. What did you find?
So in 2024, Chicago police officers on average pointed their weapon at an individual 11 times. Now that is a significant increase since 2022 and 2023. Now we don't have data yet for the first 6 months of 2025, but just between 2023 and 2024 saw a 13% increase in these incidents. None of these incidents have been ruled unreasonable or unjustified by department officials.
Police leaders, they're in the process of revising how these incidents are reviewed. What's changing there?
Well, the consent decree calls for a group of specialized officers, highly trained in the Tactical Review and Evaluation Division, to decide whether these firearm pointing incidents are in line with departmental policy. The problem is that division is woefully understaffed and faces a massive backlog. To sort of chip away at that, with the approval of a federal judge and the attorney general, now Chicago police captains in 13 of the city's 22 police districts evaluate those incidents directly with their officers. That has proved effective as part of a pilot program that is set to be expanded citywide, officials say, early next year.
So during a hearing on the consent decree, of course, that is the federal order requiring CPD to stop routinely violating residents' constitutional rights, both the attorney general and a coalition of police reform groups, they said that there are concerns about this change. What are they worried about?
Quality control. If police captains across the city each get to make these decisions, that raises the possibility that the standards will be different across the city. It also means that potentially there could be officers who are being given bad feedback or poorly trained, and they will subject Chicagoans to violence when they encounter them. That's a big problem for a department that has only complied with 16% of the consent decree more than 6.5 years after it started.
Long road remains ahead for the Chicago Police Department. Heather Sharon, thank you.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news.
WTTW News coverage of policing and police reform is supported by the Joyce Foundation.
Chicago's Department of Family and Support Services, as well as local advocates for the homeless, are preparing for possible encampment sweeps. This follows news of impending closures on the north side's Legion Park and Gompers Park. Meanwhile, the city's shelter system is already strained, and a looming federal threat is raising even more questions. Joining us now with more are Doug Schenkelberg, the executive director of the Chicago Coalition to End Homelessness, and via Zoom, Cindy Soto, the city's chief homelessness officer. Thanks to you both for joining us. Doug, I want to start with you. What are you hearing from advocates and members of the homeless community about their concerns for the unhoused population and possible encampment sweeps?
Yeah, so there's a lot of concern out there amongst people experiencing homelessness and the folks that work with them, that the increased federal presence, the enforcement mechanisms, whether or not there's a National Guard presence, that puts people at risk for whether it's an immigration enforcement action or for other types of attempts to enforce federal laws for folks in public. So we're trying to make sure that folks understand what their rights are and understand how to keep themselves safe in case these things happen.
Cindy Soto, what are you hearing?
Yeah, we are hearing the same thing that the public is hearing as well. We would like better communication from the federal government. We've been asking for it. In the interim, we are working with our partners like the coalition, the state, the county, all Chicago that manages our continuum of care to ensure that we are going to work with what we know and prepare for what could possibly be that federal deployment, knowing what was stated today by the federal government in terms of perhaps backtracking. That for us does not guarantee that we're in the clear and we can move forward as if they are not planning to come here. We are going to continue to address the needs of our unhoused community and ensure that we have the resources and have pooled our resources with our partners on the ground.
Right, and of course, you're referencing the president last night in D.C. saying that they would go into cities that want them there, sounding as if he's sort of hedging or reversing course or his promises on sending the National Guard into the city. But we know that there were definitely concerns in Washington, D.C. when the National Guard was deployed there. There were more than 50 encampment clearings. Does the president even have the authority to do such a thing here? Cindy, sorry, that question was to you.
Yeah, no problem. I can't see the both of you, so yeah, let me know if I'm up next. But no, the president doesn't have the authority to administer local government laws and ordinances, so we do not need him to come here and really disrupt the progress, the positive progress that under this administration, Mayor Brandon Johnson's administration, we've been making. And so we do want to ensure that, what happens with our encampments, that we, continue to address the various needs with our outreach teams, with our community partners, can continue to happen, because building trust with the residents at these encampments is so critical to this work, and ensuring that it's a human-centered approach with compassion, with a whole set of services, can be done in a way that is compassionate and it can be received with the kind of outcomes that we all desire, including what the federal government claims they are hoping to achieve as well.
Doug, your organization, along with the city, you all have created your Know Your Rights as an Unsheltered Person campaign to get ahead of any federal law enforcement mm-hmm. in Chicago, because it is a concern. ICE agents could go into homeless encampments. Right. What should unsheltered people know?
So a couple different things. One is they're at greater risk if they're in a public space. So if they have the opportunity to get into a private space, get into a shelter bed, stay with others, that's going to provide them more protection. So looking for those options, and I know the city has been working very hard to create more options for folks in that regard. That if they are approached by officials, recognizing that they have the right to remain silent, that they can say that they don't consent to a search, that they have those protections regardless of their documentation status, and that there's places that they can reach out to for help. We have a phone number on the Know Your Rights information that's being sent out around encampments that folks can call if they have questions. We can answer those questions or get them to others that can as well. There's also great groups like the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights who are doing hotlines specific to immigration enforcement that can provide people help that way.
Cindy, the president also wrote signed an emergency order this summer deploying the National Guard. That expires. But his other executive order, it is aimed at homelessness by targeting funding for Housing First programming as well as encouraging civil commitment. And I want to be clear, that emergency order deploying the National Guard in D.C., that expires today. What is your reaction to the president's executive order encouraging civil commitment and going after those funding for Housing First approaches?
Yeah, our reaction is, concerning, because we have proven that Housing First, that approach, which, can look like many different, variables depending on the city or the jurisdiction that's implementing it. But the one in the city of Chicago that also incorporates permanent supportive housing, rapid rehousing, does meet the needs of individuals that might be beyond just housing, but it addresses them in a way that prioritizes their housing. Housing First is a homelessness assistance approach that prioritizes providing permanent housing to people experiencing homelessness. And prior to the pandemic from 2015 to 2020, Chicago was seeing a gradual decrease in homelessness through the implementation of Housing First. Housing First is based on the understanding that client choice is a valuable part of the equation. Housing selection and supportive services are also included in this process. And so with client choice, with that trust building opportunities that our community members are constantly doing, the coalition is constantly doing, Housing First can help solve homelessness and make it ideally functional zero. And so if the administration wants to go after Housing First, they're ideally keeping people unhoused, which is against, again, of what they're claiming their end goal to be.
Doug, some neighbors living near encampments in Legion Park, Gompers Park, they've expressed concern over the homeless encampments. A flyer from residents simply identified as the Legion Park neighbors. The flyer reads, quote, Legion Park neighbors have been exposed to many negative conditions in Legion Park for the past 18 months posed by the unhoused building and living compounds in the park. Neighbors have had to endure many dangerous conditions, including garbage and pollution, fires, physical assault, verbal harassment, illegal drugs, crime, theft, and trespassers in our yard. At the same time, Park District CEO Carlos Ramirez Rosa today said that, you know, they can sweep encampments and they can, you know, clear out, you know, 60 or so encampments. They're going to turn up at another park.
Right.
And it's a continuous cycle. Right. What is the solution here?
The solution's housing. Homelessness is a housing problem. And so what we see when we see encampments, that's a manifestation of a deeper problem that we have to address. So whether, you know, to Superintendent Ramirez Rosa's point, clearing out an encampment only means that someone's going to have to move somewhere else unless we have the permanent long-term housing and supports that they need. So I would hope that those residents around Legion Park or Gompers Park who are concerned about the encampments and the impact on the community can focus on working on the true solution, which is getting resources available to create the housing that's needed, because that's the only way that we really get rid of encampments is to get people the opportunity to get into housing that they need.
Have stable housing. Okay, that's where we'll have to leave it. Best of luck and thanks for the work that you do to you both, Doug Schenkelberg and Cindy Soto. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, a look at inequities in HIV prevention funding. Advocates say funding inequities are leaving Black-led HIV prevention groups struggling to keep doors open and provide care. They're pushing for more help from local lawmakers to prioritize Black and brown people who they say are uniquely impacted by the virus. Meanwhile, advocates say federal cuts to grants, Medicaid, and diversity initiatives are also threatening to weaken response to the disease. Joining us now are Chris Balthazar, Executive Director of Task Force Prevention and Community Services, a community-based organization in Austin, and Timothy Jackson, Senior Director of Policy and Advocacy for AIDS Foundation Chicago. Thanks to you both for joining us. So, Illinois Department of Public Health, their data shows that Black and Hispanic people make up about 73% of HIV and AIDS cases diagnosed in the state since 2018. That's a lot. But U.S. Census data shows the state is only 14% Black and 18% Hispanic. Timothy, why are Blacks and Hispanics so disproportionately affected by this?
Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. There are a litany of reasons. One, from access to care, access to prevention, medical mistrust, stigma is a large part of it. But oftentimes what we see is that the communities that are represented so disproportionately, Black and Latinx communities, as you mentioned, is that those communities just don't have access to providers or community organizations, and oftentimes those community organizations just don't have the funding, the robust funding that they need in order to take care of their own communities. And so that is really kind of at the heart of what we're seeing that keeps those inequities going.
Chris, let's expand on that a little bit more. What are some of the barriers that Black people with HIV and AIDS face in accessing care?
Absolutely. I think, some of the things that we hear commonly at Task Force is, access in terms of navigating insurance. It's not easy for young adults to navigate complicated healthcare systems, including insurances, but also finding the right provider. Not all providers are PrEP-friendly or willing or able to provide treatment, for HIV. That's another challenge. I think another challenge is cost, not knowing how much is going to cost, what your copay is going to be, if you're going to get a bill, if this medical care provider accepts your insurance. And so these challenges, I think, oftentimes can be overwhelming.
How do we overcome those challenges?
Absolutely. Well, that's why organizations like Task Force exist, because that's exactly what our staff are trained to do, is to provide support with navigating healthcare systems, as well as support with navigating insurance. And so we can enroll individuals in insurance, and we also help them provide, be connected to medical care providers who can provide culturally specific care as well as gender-affirming care.
And Chris, you've been pushing, of course, for more equitable funding for Black-led HIV
Absolutely.
And AIDS prevention organizations. What have been the challenges in getting that funding, especially for a smaller organization?
Absolutely. Well, as you said, Black communities are disproportionately impacted by HIV. And what we see, not just here in Chicago, but even nationally, is that Black-led organizations are much more likely to have smaller budgets. And, and I think that, to Timothy's point, that makes it harder for us to provide supports to our community. And so some of the challenges that we see right now is, especially, with what's happening at the federal level, a lot of, it's harder to now allocate funding to address communities that are disproportionately impacted, right? So, being able to say, well, we're going to, allocate these dollars to support HIV in Black communities because they are disproportionately impacted, or LGBT or same gender loving communities because they are disproportionately impacting, that's a challenge. It's can't do that under these new rules.
Timothy, what changes would you like to see to help bridge that funding gap?
Yeah, absolutely. It's making sure that we, as larger organizations, AIDS Foundation Chicago, part of our racial equity plan is increasing each year the amount of money that goes to Black-led, Latinx-led organizations. Again, making sure that we're not going to end the HIV epidemic without community, and making sure that we're supporting those organizations. So, that's something simple that we can do, make sure that most of our grants, subcontracted organizations are Black-led, Latinx-led in community. But then also understanding, to Chris's point, equity is not a bad thing. It is not a bad word. And understanding that, again, in order for us to end the HIV epidemic here in Illinois and across the country, we have to do it in the communities that are most impacted. And so that's simple.
Timothy, can private grants donations make up for the gap that you all might be experiencing in federal dollars?
Unfortunately, I would love for it to, but for so much we rely on kind of like this, dog's breakfast of kind of like things, federal and state grant dollars to be able to provide care to people living with and vulnerable to HIV. But with the cuts that we're seeing on Capitol Hill, that just makes it very difficult when you're talking about prevention or care, housing. All of these things are really, endangered by congressional Republicans in the White House.
Chris, how much of your organization would you say, how much of your budget relies on federal dollars?
Yeah, so we've actually seen cuts, just between 2024 and 2025, where we've seen about a 10 to 15% cut in government revenue, we are anticipating further cuts even for 2026.
What does that mean for you and the work that you do, the people you serve?
Yeah, it becomes more challenging. So we have to certainly be more creative with finding other revenue sources to help bridge, or fill in those gaps. Being able to, trying to expand support in the private sector.
Timothy, almost out of time, but what is the state's role here? Can they step in?
The state's role is they're going to have to roll up their sleeves and going to be happy to fill the void. We understand that the old adage is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and understanding that if we can prevent HIV, that's going to go a long way. But we need partners at state and local levels to be able to roll up their sleeves and get in this fight with us, push back on the federal government, and make sure that we have all of the resources that we need in order to continue our work to end the HIV epidemic.
Briefly, as someone who lives with HIV, are you concerned about losing ground on the progress that has been made over the years?
Absolutely. Between the cuts to Medicaid that we saw in HR 1 in July, now these potential cuts where they're getting rid of HIV prevention dollars in the federal government, slashing Ryan White, which is a program that provides care to people living with HIV, we are literally going to see people die. And that's really kind of the heart of it.
The frightening place where we'll have to leave it right now. Thanks to you both, Chris Balthazar and Timothy Jackson, for joining us. Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
And before we go tonight, an update to a story we brought you earlier. Utah officials say they have a person of interest in custody in the fatal shooting of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. You can check our website for updates on that developing story. And that is our show for this Wednesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. What the Supreme Court's recent decision means for racial profiling and future immigration raids. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports inclusionary excellence throughout the legal profession.